What's up, boys? You know who it is, the trendsetter himself, your boy Tony, and I am kicking off a brand new series here on the Mystery Crate called Let's Eat. And if you've been listening to Local Hours Past, you know that my dream job is to steal Guy Fieri's role as the host of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. With that being said, I was taking a creative hack the other day, and as we are on this perpetual treadmill of content that we are continually running after to provide you with the best stuff that your ears can listen to here on the Levitard and Friends Network, I said, you know what? What if I make my dreams come to life, speak it into existence, and actually create it? I did it. This is what it is. Let's Eat. Half interview, half food tasting. I'm going to go around to different places in Miami and explore the best chefs, the most creative people, whether it be food Instagrammers, whether it be chefs from all of your favorite restaurants, or restaurants that you want to travel to in the future if you ever come down to Miami post-COVID. I did weather all of the elements with COVID, socially distanced. We made everything happen. I think it's going to be a really cool concept. Not only audio-wise are you going to get this Mystery Crate, but I will present to you something more important. The creative aspect of the entire visual documentary of my trip to the place that I'm going to say in a second. So you not only are going to get the audio portion, in maybe a week's time, we're going to kick out the digital video portion of the interview and the food tasting so you can see the food, so you can see us chopping it up. Trust me, it was really fun. Not only is it great to eat for free, but it's also really great to catch up with amazing people. And the person I had on today on the kickoff, on the inaugural Let's Eat series podcast, I had to bring on a personal friend of mine, somebody who was a South Beach pioneer in the early 80s. Like when South Beach was nothing, he was out there creating something at a very young age and has been incredibly successful as a chef in Miami and in South Florida. His name is Bernie Matz. He's the culinary director for Men in Hospitality, which includes the best taco restaurant on the planet, Bodega South Beach. Okay, I'm going to take you on an audio tour of not only Bernie's life, but the food, and it's going to be kick-ass. This is Let's Eat. What's up, boys? We are here at the world famous Bodega on South Beach. It's the first on-site podcast for the Mystery Crate on Levitard and Friends Network. We are here. We're going to talk to head chef Bernie Matz. He is the number one guy when it comes to tacos in Miami, in South Florida. Yeah, I said it. Let's go hang out with him. When I think of quintessential South Beach, OG Miami, I don't know if I can think of somebody other than Bernie Matz. Okay, and Bernie has a family friend that has been around my family before I was born. It's crazy to think of you in that setting, right? Like, I know you as Bernie, not as super legend, South Beach pioneer. When there was nothing here, you were here, like, staking claim and making your vision happen. I am so impressed of your come up, your journey, because to me, one of the things I find so fascinating in this world is a couple things. Chefs, stand-up comedians, those people can create out of nothing, right? Like when you see your favorite stand-up comedian on stage, how do they come up with the stuff? How does Dave Chappelle come up with all the things that he comes up with? How do chefs go into a kitchen and have the same ingredients as a normal person yet come out with what you cook, right? And you are the pioneer, probably the leading guy in South Florida, in the country, in New Latin. Right? Like that is your claim to fame. I want to talk to you about how you came up, your journey, just the way that you transitioned and created something out of nothing. So let's start here. And that was that a good intro? Are you good? You happy?
I'm thrilled. I mean, the fact that you compared me to a comedian, that's like, they're the most brilliant people on the planet. The only other category that I would throw in and mention would be musicians, because I'm so in awe of musicians. Athletes too, of course. But comedians, how do they come up with that kind of stuff?
And I think of you in the kitchen, like, how do you come up with the taco menu you do, the burritos you do? And like, later on, we're going to test and taste all that stuff and it's going to be kick ass. But
the truth is that you really don't know how you come up with it. You just do.
It just happens.
Yeah, it just happens.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second.
That's how comedians do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Comedians, musicians, athletes, a little different because you have
gotta work out.
Training and all the stuff that comes into it. You can go and be really great at the guitar and all of a sudden you're Jimi Hendrix. Right, you can go into the kitchen, whip stuff up, and all of a sudden you're Bernie Mats. Like, that to me is so fascinating. Before we get into everything, you lined up here, and we're here at Bodega live on set. Okay, Taqueria, tequila. How many tequilas do you guys have here?
We have about 150 different tequilas.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just getting that confirmed. Right? Yes. Thumbs up.
In probably one of the coolest bar settings on Miami Beach.
Yes.
I don't think there's a better place than you walk in through a urinal and all of a sudden you're at a bar that is kick ass. So you're going to take this first shot. Here it is. All right. Mm. 1984.
Nice.
University of Florida.
Yes.
MBA in finance.
MBA. That's right, in finance.
And now you're a chef. take me how you went from there to where you are now. Like, what did you think you were gonna do getting out of college?
You know, it's one of those crazy classic stories that you know, as parents bringing you up. My mother says that I was born to be in the kitchen since I was a little kid, that I would play with the pots and pans. And she always wanted me to go to chef school, always encouraged me to go to chef school. But when it came down to it, my parents separated, my dad had to pay for school. And when I told him that I wanted to go to chef school, he said, I'm not paying for that. I'll pay for business school and you come and work for me and you come and you take over my business.
This is a Cuban
and
household.
That's how it went down. Yeah, you know, my parents were born in Cuba. We've got an Eastern European background that ended up in Cuba in the 20s and 30s. So I don't consider ourselves, you know, of real Cuban heritage, but I grew up in Miami and my parents were born and grew up in Cuba until Mr. Castro showed up. And so I consider myself Cuban as hell. Yeah, I'm so Cuban.
So your dad said, I'm gonna pay for school only if
you
come out, you
there was
get
no
your
discussion.
Degree in finance and you go and work for me and our family business.
That's right.
That was it.
And I went to school wondering, why am I even going to school? I'm going to get out of school. I'm going to go work for family business. Yeah.
And what was that family business?
My grandfather did it in Cuba. They were manufacturers of men's clothes. They would, back in the early days, in the 60s and 70s, he had a factory in Hialeah. They had big spreading rooms where they would buy the fabric and cut it and make shirts and jackets and pants, you know, depending on the fashion of the time.
So you went from that and you get out of school and you're like, all right, I'm gonna have to do this, I guess. How did you transition from being in the men's clothing manufacturing business to all of a sudden opening up your first restaurant at 24 years old? Because that's the buried lead here, right? You and another guy opened a restaurant in South Beach at 24 and 20 years old. Like, walk me through that journey. How'd you go from men's shirts to opening up Wet Paint Cafe?
You know, now as a father, my children are well on their way in their 30s, very successful. They found career paths and so forth. But when you look at kids today that are 20 years old and 24 years old, they're still living with their parents. They can barely get out of their own way. And we were from here and we could feel South Beach and the resurgence coming. We really wanted to be in on the development, and this restaurant project kind of popped up. It was this existing old Italian restaurant on Lincoln Road.
Okay.
I mean, the rent was free. The Lincoln Road was empty. I think we paid $5 a square foot. We paid about, I don't know, $1,000 a month or something like that.
On Lincoln Road.
On Lincoln Road. On Lincoln Road. At the time, though, but on Lincoln Road at the time meant nothing because there was nobody walking up and down Lincoln Road. We were really the first ones, the pioneers that brought that back. South Florida Art Center, there was so much storefront empty, lying empty, that the owners of the building kind of gave it to the arts. And they started this nonprofit called South Florida Art Center, which basically rented out the storefronts of Lincoln Road. If you can imagine now getting $300-$400 a square foot, they would rent them out to artists to kind of like use the studios.
That's crazy.
Right next door to our first restaurant on Lincoln Road, the owner of the building donated the space to the Miami City Ballet for them to use as their studios. And they put a big glass there. So, I mean, we were literally right next door to the ballerinas working out all day.
24 years old. Your partner was 20. How the hell did you do it? Like, looking back now and thinking what you just said, 20 to 24 years old, in that range, you don't even know what you're doing, right? Like, when I was that age, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know where I was going, much less would I have been able to run a business, right? And that's what you guys were doing, opening up a restaurant basically in a place that didn't exist yet. Like, you guys had the vision that one day Lincoln Road can be what it is now. But back then it was nothing. Like, how did you guys manage to open up a business at 20 and 24 years old?
Well, I did have a career prior to the restaurant where I pioneered a line of clothing from Europe through my family business here in the United States. So I was able to travel the United States selling this European clothing at 23, 24 years old. So I made a little bit of money just figuring that business out. Things made a turn, and this kind of presented itself. I met this guy, Carlos Prio Jr., called himself.
Can you elaborate on what that actually means in the Cuban community? Because there's people that are listening that hear the name and say, okay, fine, whatever. But can you elaborate on that who that would be?
Today, you might not understand it, but back in that time, in the mid-80s, it was still fresh on people's minds, on the people of Miami, the Cubans of Miami. Carlos Prio was the last son of the last democratically elected president of Cuba, Carlos Prio Socarra. So Carlos grew up here in Miami, Key Biscayne, friends, Belén, you know, that situation. And he had some means. I guess his dad had left him some money, and we had a little bit of money, and we were dangerous. We were ballsy, we were crazy, and we were dangerous. We had a vision too. The place was amazing. Now that I think back on it, you can't even imagine. We brought over a Parisian artist who wanted to come to South Beach. So all we did was, I think we just paid for the materials, and he worked for 8 weeks doing murals up and down the place. It was really ridiculous. We also had the concept where it was an art gallery because we were surrounded by so much art. So the restaurant was like a gallery. The tables were painted by the local artists. You know, it had all that stuff going for it. As far as the food goes, we always wanted to create a Miami fusion.
Yes.
I think we actually called it New Miami Cuisine, right? Because the new fusion was just starting to come. Some of the chefs in the early 80s were putting that together, like Norman Van Aken down in Key West. There was a little movement here of some Cuban guys, but really the godfather of Nuevo Latin Cuisine is Douglas Rodriguez,
right. Who ended up
chefing in the restaurant and really taking that direction. We gave him the direction. We told him we want to do a new Miami cuisine, which was what? Cuban food mixed with a little Jewish food, mixed with a little bit of Latin food.
The culture, right? The culture
and
of Miami.
South Florida, too, was here.
That's crazy, because you get into Wet Paint Cafe. Are you cooking at that point? Are you trying to make recipes?
I didn't cook. At the beginning, I didn't cook.
So you were just a finance guy. Yeah, you're like, I'm going to make things happen, like, business-wise.
That's right. We were like front of the house hosts. And one, after about 7 months into it, the chef walks on a Saturday night. And that's when we went out and got Douglas Rodriguez. And after that, experiencing that trauma, I never left the kitchen again there for Wet Pink Cafe for 2 years. And Douglas and I worked really close together. He was an already experienced young guy. He was 21 years old.
My God.
Yeah. It was his first chef job.
And it's like there's no way
21.
That right now that can be replicated. Because the industry is dominated by people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, right? Like you can't break in and be an executive chef somewhere at 21 years old.
No, I never think ever.
And there's too much capital involved to try and start up a business. That's why you were saying. There's no way it works in Wynwood. There's no way it works in Brickell. There's no way it works on the beach. Like, where can you go to have two guys in their 20s start a restaurant and actually have it be successful?
And be in a legitimate spot, like early South Beach. I don't know. I mean, maybe if you went out to like some of the outskirts of Miami where there's still real estate that can be had, you'd have to start off in a neighborhood that hasn't started to gentrify yet.
Right.
Because once it's already starting to gentrify,
like Wynwood
it's
right
already
now.
Too late. No,
for the
Wynwood
people that don't know what Wynwood is, Wynwood was an area that was low socioeconomic, all of a sudden got bought up by a ton of developers and then threw billions of dollars into Wynwood, creating it what it is as an arts and cultural kind of mecca for Miami. And when people hear that, they think of the Wynwood walls, they think, oh my God, this is incredible. That used to be nothing 8 years ago, 9 years ago, it was nothing. And then all of a sudden it exploded. So that's to me, that's incredible that you guys had that vision here in South Beach. And everybody worldwide thinks of South Beach and says, oh my God, like that's where I need to be. There's people just naked everywhere, people drinking, people doing drugs. It's just, the wild, wild west. No. And it wasn't that for a while. Like you guys really brought in and ushered in that new era of what South Beach could have been. So let's get back to your journey, your chef at the Wet Paint Cafe. What's the next move? You realize I'm never leaving the kitchen. I love cooking. What's the next move?
Yeah, I left the kitchen. After Wet Paint Cafe, I left the kitchen. I went to work for a restaurant company because I had to get a job. I moved to New York. Moved to New York because somebody actually hired me to help them open up a restaurant in New York. No, somebody opened up a Wet Paint Cafe in Soho.
So basically took your idea and said, this is so good that we want to move it. What year is
it
this?
Didn't work there either, but but it was a cool experience. And then I met my wife there, and she was a Cubanita from Miami.
We met in Soho?
In New York.
Okay.
Yeah, she came to visit us through friends. And then through the 90s, I came back and we had children and went back into regular business. I was always somehow involved in the restaurant business. Somehow or another, I either had a sandwich shop or a gourmet, some kind of Cuban shop, or I was always in the restaurant business through the 90s and even in 2000. When I came back to Lincoln Road, I partnered up with Mitchell Kaplan back on Lincoln Road, right next to where we were 20 years later.
Deja vu, right? And it completely changed.
Cafe at Books and Books. Well, our rent, the rent went up about 50 times. That's how it changed. And you know what? There was tons of people. Yeah. You know, I would tell people, the rent used to be $2,000 and I couldn't pay the rent. Now it's, 40 grand and we have no problem paying the rent. We had a really good run for 10 years on Lincoln Road from 2004 to 2013. Yeah.
So you get to Bodega. How did that journey go from, obviously you're doing stuff at Books and Books, you're doing Halves and Wholes for a while. Like how did you transition and come to Bodega and really be the soul behind what the menu looks like? Because we're going to taste the food in a little bit. And I've been here, probably 15 times. And every time I leave satisfied, everything I have on the menu is incredible. There's nothing that I would say, I'm not gonna order that again. Like everything is fire. How did you make that transition from what you were doing kind of solo to jumping in with Menon and Bodega and all the stuff you did here?
When I left Books and Books, Lincoln Road was really transitioning and I wanted to get out and the Books and Books guys didn't. So I left and I joined Menon Hospitality that was about to open up Bodega. This was right after that. 6 years ago, we've been here now. And I became their culinary director. So this was my first project. I've gone on to do a lot of other projects, but this project has without a doubt been the most successful project I've ever been involved with in 33 years wow. in the restaurant business.
Wow.
So I'm very, very proud. You know, when you do something that's like really legit, when you put that record album together or that comedy show together, that hour of material, that's like your greatest hits, and you really knew what you were doing, and you really put everything you had all together, you get Bodega.
This, right.
You get Bodega. I love going to Mexico. I took my kids to Mexico every year when they were little for 20 years. The food, I always thought the food in Mexico was the most sophisticated, most amazing food on the planet.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because they teach you, in culinary school, I actually went back and got, I didn't even talk to you about that, but I went back to culinary school in the 90s.
Okay.
And got my degree in culinary.
You got legit.
I got legit, and I don't even know why, because it wasn't a good experience. You can imagine, after already being in the business and being, you know, a home chef, an artist, to go back to school was very awkward.
Else teach you how to do things that you think you already know how to do. You're like, I don't need you to tell me how to slice these and julienne these onions. I know how to do it already.
It was very awkward. And they teach you classic European food. That's where, you know, gourmet comes from, which I was already way past that. That was already old and boring and
nobody wants to have any sense. Like, nobody wants to cut the mirepoix. Like, get out of here.
Butter and cream on everything.
I'm good. I'm trying to do something completely different.
I don't know if you weren't born, but in the 80s, pasta was like a health food. You know, we went through that. I remember people ate pasta thinking it was healthy food. You ate pasta before you were going to work out, before you ran. You ate a big bowl of pasta. Yeah, imagine that. So who eats pasta today? I don't know. I don't know when was the last time I had a bowl of pasta.
Really? I do enjoy a good pasta. That's my
Bodega
advice.
Was... just a culmination. I knew that I had to start with the tortilla. I never set out to get, like, to get the basics of each product so perfect and so down. I've always said that I cook like your grandmother, except for way better. Like, I kick your grandmother's ass in the kitchen. You know, so. And Mexican cuisine, like most ethnic cuisine, comes from abuelas.
Comes from the house.
Moms that are taught by their moms. It comes from the house. When you can up the skills, the technical skills of what they do, then you can really have more time to explore. Okay, if it takes abuela 6 hours to chop something, it takes me 20 minutes.
Right.
So I can really explore that situation. Cooking is a coefficient. I don't want to get too formulaic.
No, let's do it.
But cooking is a coefficient of the quality ingredients that you start with times the time that you have.
Right.
How much love can I put into this? And it's not time cooking. It's just time preparing.
Right.
Everything has your time. So the faster that you can produce, the more you can do.
So did you learn in Mexico? Like, under somebody, did you go and specifically set out to say, I'm going to learn from the best of the best? Or is it just a culmination of you going so many times and going to all the different taquerias and street vendors and just experiencing the culture where you said, you know what? This is easily replicatable like somewhere else. Like, let me take it back to the States in Miami and let me make this, but just to a very refined level. Like, I think that's the cool thing about what you do here is that it's home cooking. But it's elevated home cooking. It's something that, yeah, my grandmother would make, but like you said, the way that you prepare, the love that you put into it is totally different, because sometimes you get a half-assed meal at home. Here, you never get a half-assed meal.
No. See, I've always said that no matter what I'm making, even if it's a grilled cheese sandwich, I'm incapable of making anything that doesn't...
You don't miss, bro. You don't miss. I'm telling you, you don't miss.
You just can't. You're not capable of doing that. Like I guess some people are incapable of, you know, playing the piano and making it not sound good. It's just something you love to do. It has to be perfect. It has to be that good. Even if you're making avocado toast in the morning, you know, for someone that you love.
That's incredible that you have, you know, the vision to come out and put together a new Latin style focused on tacos, focused on burritos, focused on that blend of Mexican, Cuban, you know, Caribbean style stuff. And that's your greatest success. Right, like going back to your roots is your greatest success. And I think that's tremendous. It's so cool.
I, 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 I've been doing this for 33 years, and 2 years ago, for the first time, I got invited to the New York Food and Wine Festival to come make tacos. You know, so, you know, after everything that you've been through and all the amazing content that you've put out, the tacos are what's really getting you, you know, the notoriety.
Right.
I love tacos. I think it's amazing. And I spent a lot of time in Mexico, and I would go to the most ghetto of places you could ever think of, off the sides of the roads where the truck guys are in the morning.
Places where you can't
even
go.
Places where Americans wouldn't go.
Right.
White people would not go there. But I spoke perfect Spanish. I was like this weird, big, white dude in the middle of all these.
Right.
But I was like, I thought I was one of them.
You're one of the boys.
I was just one of them. Yeah. And then I looked at it and I said, shit, this is awesome. And I loved the whole thing. But I can do this.
I can do better.
Come on. And no offense, they're selling you a taco for 50 cents.
Right.
You know, they're not using short rib.
Right, exactly. Like stuff that you're using here, the ingredients, like I said, are elevated. Right. What's the best dish you've ever had outside of the country? Right, like is it in Mexico? Is it somewhere else? Like what's
I'm gonna say something crazy.
Okay, I'm here for it.
The thing that first popped into my mind, the mussels and french fries in Paris.
Really?
It's the best thing I've ever eaten in my life.
Why?
I don't know why. I love mussels and those fries, and then they give you mayonnaise and the ketchup, and that's what popped into my head as like, what was a great
respect. Did they come together?
Okay, so you know how, like here, if you go to Chicago or something, you know they have those little hot dog stands
right
on every corner.
Right.
Well, in Paris, they have a little mussel stand on every corner.
Really?
Yeah. So that's all I wanted to eat when I went there. We went there once a year because of the big fabric show was there in Paris. So for over a decade, we went to Paris every, you know, annually. And that's what I remember looking forward to.
And this is before we got into the restaurant business. This is when you were still manufacturing and helping your dad with shirts.
Some of the best, no doubt the best food I've ever eaten is in Mexico, though.
Really?
Nobody cooks like it. The best ceviche I've ever had was in Mexico. Even just everything that I can think of that was cooked perfectly in the best seafood, everything they do is organic, and they don't even know what organic is.
Right.
It's just
organic.
Chicken's just organic. They don't know that it's not organic. So while Mexican food is without a doubt, that's what popped in my head.
Mussels and french fries in Paris, but then everything else is Mexican food, street vendors, just stuff off the beaten path that you would never find, and people wouldn't be brave enough to venture out and go find somewhere else, right? Like if you were to tell somebody who's traveling to another country and you were to tell them, what's the one thing that if you could experience, go do, right? Is it going off the beaten path and trying food that you've never tried?
You know, everybody's got their threshold of what they'll try and what they won't try. For me, one of the worst things you can be in this world is a tourist.
Right.
Anywhere you go, try not to be a tourist. I don't like to travel anywhere unless you're going for business, where I don't have somebody that I know or a friend or a family member that's going to take me to the right places where you need to go. And that's really important, because if not, then it's a lot of trial and error. Okay. After some time, you can travel in cities, and I call it a restaurant dar.
Right.
I can't drive down the street and pick out the good spots. But really, you want to go where you know people and they take you to special places, wherever it is.
Right.
Anywhere in the world, you're always going to have some talented person that has organically grown something out of love. Just because they go every friggin' morning a las 5 de la mañana at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they start to prepare, and they're there all day, and they work until 7 o'clock at night, and then they go home with whatever they made that day.
But it's a product of love.
I think that's the
one thing in food that I can always tell if something's made with love or if it's not, right? Like that's the missing ingredient. People say, what makes a restaurant so successful? It sounds stupid, right? It sounds corny. It sounds like bullshit, but it's love. It's the chef loves what he's doing. The chef emanates that love and puts it into the dish. I went to Thailand for my honeymoon this past year, 6 months ago. It feels like 1,000 years ago because of COVID, but it was 6 months ago. And we went to a little hole in the wall pad Thai spot in Bangkok. It was maybe a quarter of what this room is. They were making the stuff in the back alley behind the restaurant with a big wok, with the rice noodles, with fresh lettuce, with all ingredients fresh. It was the most incredible thing I had ever tasted. And it was made by a lady who is somebody's grandmother and just happens to have a 100-square-foot restaurant with three tables in it, and it's a Michelin star restaurant out of nowhere. And it's like, that's what interests
me
so much.
And it's recognized as
something
Michelin.
That's huge, that is nothing. It's literally, we wouldn't even be able to fit some of the chairs in there. That's how small it was. So I love traveling to different places and trying that food, because we're so programmed in our ways to eat the same shit, right? I'm gonna go to McDonald's, I'm gonna go to eat Pizza Hut, I'm gonna do this, KFC, whatever. When you go out of your comfort zone and you try stuff that you wouldn't usually try, that's when you find the hidden gems. And I feel like that's something that is like what made you the chef that you are, is like trying those places and not being scared of, oh, I don't like how that tastes, or I don't like going here. Like, you were just open-minded and said, whatever happens, like, let's deal with it. I'm going to eat whatever it is and just enjoy it.
Yeah, of course. And it gets scary sometimes.
Yeah.
It gets scary, especially when you know that people before you have, it hasn't gone right. But you can't be scared. I've never got sick in Mexico all my years cooking. Never.
Not even drinking water when you're in the shower, all of a sudden.
You know,
we
were always careful. And then after, for like the last 20 years, it's been good. Because I've been going for 40 years.
You're going for 40 years?
Yeah, that's how old I am.
That's a teenager. Crazy, dude.
I know.
When was a time that you were looking at the situation and you thought, shit, like, this is it for me? Like, my days in this industry are numbered, right? Like, what was the darkest point that it got when you were in this business? Because you and I have talked at length before this that the restaurant business is a bitch, and whatever you try to do, margins are razor thin. You have to have the right product at the right price point at the right place that people can find you. Like, in all these different places, what was that moment where you sat down, you looked at the numbers and said, it's not happening. I got to go back and create a men's fabric store because this restaurant thing isn't happening.
Well, for me, it happened recently after Books and Books in 2013. I really felt that was it for me at my age. I couldn't play ball anymore. Yeah.
You're an old dog.
And even I was an old dog. And really, for South Beach, which is the land of the young and beautiful, I was really an old dog. So I attempted to, you know, reinvent myself and move up, up the coast of Florida a little bit. And I got my real estate license, and I was going to change my life until Jared Galbert called me from Men in Hospitality and told me he was opening up a place called Bodega, and if I wanted to come down here and try it. And again, you as you go through the path of life, you're constantly reinventing yourself. Yeah. And you're trying to stay young and you're trying to stay relevant.
For sure.
Right? And you want to be around young people that keep you
young.
You know, that keep you young and hip.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's when it happened for me about 7 years ago.
7 years ago, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah, I was done.
I'm moving up to Stewart.
Yeah, I was told.
You're too old.
Yeah, I was too old.
And now you're at the biggest success of your entire life in the restaurant industry here, thinking 7 years ago you were too old to be here.
To be here, that's yeah. Crazy. Yeah, and I feel more relevant than ever,
yeah.
Honestly. You know, the cool thing about cooking is not in the kitchen, not online, not putting out food every day, all day long. But as you get older, you really get better.
Mm.
You know,
you age like a fine wine.
You really do. I think that I've spoken to musicians and they say the same thing. I don't know if they've got the wear and tear to go out on tour, you know, for 6 months at a time, but their skills keep getting better and better and better into their 60s and 70s. And you see some of these old rock guys still hammering it out into their late 60s and 70s.
What's next for you? What's the next evolution of Bernie Matz? Because you're continually evolving, right?
Yeah.
What's the next evolution look like for you?
The next evolution is a business model that's much simpler than the restaurant business. the restaurant business has a lot too many moving parts, from, you know, manufacturing, from receiving to manufacturing to retailing. I want to create a much simpler model.
I love it. I love it.
All right, let's see. We're getting to, I mean, Bernie has put out a smorgasbord of different things. Like, we've had the, what is this? Because I don't want to do it a disservice.
That is the surf and turf, the tierra y mar quesadilla is a triple layer. Oh, first God, layer is with with grilled shrimp. And then the second layer is
with short rib.
Braised short rib.
Oh, God.
Then we had the
croqueta preparada taco, which if you don't know Spanish, it's basically a prepared, it's a sandwich that Cubans have.
That's
that
right.
Is croquetas, which are essentially tubes of meat. It doesn't sound as good in English.
It certainly really doesn't. That's right. It's a breaded bechamel of ham.
Yes. That is deep
fried. That's deep fried.
That turns into a...
You know, the croqueta, you've got the crunch on the outside and then just the creaminess on the inside.
It's so, a Cuban staple.
It's definitely a Cuban staple. I mean, Cubans eat croquetas for breakfast. That's a breakfast food.
Think about that.
I'm amazed. I don't know what's worse for you, a croqueta or a donut. I don't know. They're up there.
I don't know.
They're up there.
We had that taco that has basically pulled pork for our English, you know.
That's right. Carnitas, pulled pork.
Pulled pork, essentially. Braised in, I don't even know what, lemon and mojo, probably. Delicious. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the nachos now, which are carne asada nachos, which is basically steak cut up. There's also, I think you said, braised short rib in that too.
No. This is just shaved ribeye.
Shaved ribeye.
Yeah, shaved ribeye.
And then the elote corn, which I love elote corn. Like, when did you first experience elote corn and say, oh my God, this is the most incredible thing I've ever had?
You know, corn is so popular and people love it, especially, to me, it is the quintessential, like, street carnival. I remember as a kid, the coolest thing you would eat at the youth fair that came only once a year was the roasted corn. That was the only place you could get it. You know, you could, I don't know why nobody ever served it, but
they're waiting for you, bro.
Yeah. No, they do this on every corner in Mexico. You can get this roasted corn.
There's something about the cotija cheese that is really like
the cream and the cheese. Pot. Yeah, with the corn. I didn't come up with it. I just perfected it.
Exactly.
That's right.
All right, I'm gonna dive here into the carne asada. And I'm sorry, I'm a mess. You guys can see me. I'm all over the place. Doesn't matter because these are so good. Let's get a little bit of carne asada. Let's get a couple.
Let's get junk food.
Bro, what's the cream? There's a Chipotle style cream sauce. Like,
okay. So what I do is I infuse some chilies into Mexican crema. And, you know, those of us that grew up going to Mexican restaurants here in America where they serve you sour cream, this shit tastes terrible. Mm-hmm. Mexican crema is like butter. It's really like creamy. I put a little bit of chili in there and it's just...
No, it knocks it out of the park because I don't think that... Like I said, the sour cream is... What is sour cream? What does it taste like?
It's gross.
No, there's nothing there. When you infuse the chilies, when you make it something that hits your palate and you recognize, like, oh man, this is a little spicy, like there's a little funny, there's a little backy, whatever it is, especially mixed with the jalapenos, like it's a game changer. Like, these are probably one of the best nachos I've ever had.
Yeah,
I'm not even kidding.
Is that like the best munchy food of all time?
God, like the quality of the meat.
No, we literally take ribeyes and shave them down. Look, it's just shaved ribeye. This is what they use in real, like if you go to a real Italian beef place in Chicago, or where they make real, not for the tourists, but real Philly cheesesteaks. Yeah. Made out of this.
God. Guys, you need to come down here. Bodega. What's the address here? Because we need to shout it out. Like 16th Street in Alton, is that what it is? Is that where we are, Bernie?
16th Street between Alton and West.
You guys gotta come down here. This is
just Google it. Everybody in Miami, every Uber driver. By the way, if you want to talk about accolades, here's an accolade. Bodega, last year, number one Uber and Lyft drop-off spot in Dade County.
You're kidding.
So every Uber driver in Miami knows where Bodega is. Yes, I'm not kidding you, no.
They have a metric for that?
I have another. They do. We got a little plaque.
Where's the plaque?
I got to dig it up.
It's somewhere else?
It's somewhere. But we got a plaque. The other fun fact from Bodega is we are the number one delivery spot. You know, we go till 5 a.m. every night. Mm-hmm. Every night. Mondays, every night. It's popping every night. So we deliver until 5 a.m. We're the number one delivery spot in Dade County after midnight. What about that? We beat all the Domino's pizzas after midnight.
You're doing it right.
All right, a huge shout out to Chef Bernie Matz, again, Director of Culinary at Bodega for Men and Hospitality on South Beach. Guys, I can't even describe to you the tacos, the nachos, the quesadillas, like all of the stuff that we, the elote, the corn, the street corn, all of the stuff that we had was so good. Like, I can eat that for the rest of my life, but and then I'll be, you know, an offensive lineman for the Miami Dolphins. Again, follow Chef Bernie Matz on Instagram at Chef Bernie Matz. He is a pioneer in the food scene for Miami. He's somebody that has been on the cutting edge of new Latin cuisine. I was really excited that I got to talk to him. And again, maybe in the next week or so, we are going to have the full version, the full episode of Let's Eat, and it's going to be absolutely incredible. I had a blast doing it. I know you guys are going to have a blast watching it. So that's that. Another thing I need you to do, not only check out Chef Bernie Matz on Instagram, not only check out Bodega's Instagram, what I need you to do, and it's very important, NBA basketball is underway. We have actual games, actual players playing actual basketball. You know me, I grew up playing basketball. I am a huge basketball fan, and there is nobody better to listen to than Zach Lowe in the Low Post. I need you to get on wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be Apple, Spotify, anywhere. Go out there, download, subscribe, review, listen to the Low Post. It is the best podcast to get you ready for the stretch run of the NBA playoffs in the bubble, what's coming up next. Great voices from all different aspects of the sport. It's going to be awesome. Check it out. Low Post, wherever you get your podcasts. And to wrap a bow on this, Let's Eat will be coming back with another installment. Shout out to my guy, Luis Montejo, and Danny Benitez, who actually videotaped everything. We are going live again somewhere else on another pop-up podcast that you will be able to hear and see in the next coming months. It's going to be awesome. It's your boy, Tony. That was Let's Eat.